$6 new crop corn futures. $6. That was a wild rally in the new crop markets and profit taking on the bull spreads. And even with the price strength in corn, the cattle complex found a way to push to the upside.
En vivo el Cinco de Mayo a través de Granja Diario Transmisión, esto es Agra Hablar. This afternoon we chat with Jamie Kohaki of Paragon Investments. In the final segment, we'll meet with Dave Walton of the Iowa Soybean Association and Iowa Biodiesel Board. Right after the news with Tyne Morgan, Todd Bubba Horowitz checks in with Price Action. I'm producer Big Apple Joe Stackler, and now, the big enchilada of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Happy Cinco de Mayo! I have no idea what you said at the start of the show.
You don't?
What are you laughing about there, Morgan?
Oh my gosh. Was that, I mean, are you fluent or did you just make all that up? Because you, I don't know the difference.
That I said live on the 5th of May via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk.
Did you have to Google the translation or did you know that?
Yes.
Yes, he's not giving you an inch here. I love it.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Well, Joe, is there any way you could drive the 9 hours to go with me to dinner tonight? Because we're planning on celebrating Cinco de Mayo and I feel like you're going to help me.
Yes. I just hope I didn't just cause an international incident or something.
Dude, are you just yesing? Are you just yesing, Tyne? Is that what I'm hearing you do?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Joe,
good work, Joe.
What time did you start drinking margaritas?
Yes. Outstanding.
Oh, my gosh.
Outstanding. Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. Welcome, everyone, to AgriTalk on this Cinco de Mayo. I've got reservations for our favorite Mexican restaurant tonight, too.
How big of a town is it? You need reservations?
They take reservation one day a year.
Ours doesn't. Any day a year. Anyway.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Let's get going here. What you got in the news?
Well, apparently you need to make a reservation to participate in these markets, Chip, because wheat was a willing follower of the rally in the corn market. July soft red winter wheat futures opened nearly steady and pulled back to once again test strong support near 720. The contract has traded really on both sides of that level for six consecutive sessions. Now, July wheat, it posted a new contract high close and set the stage for a test of the contract high at 769.5. So when you look at closing prices, Chip, July hard red winter wheat, that was 17.75 cents higher at 717. September spring wheat, that was 16 cents higher at 788.
Yeah, big moves in the markets, no question about it. And that the ability to attract buying interest at 720 in that July SRW contract, we cannot underestimate how important that is.
Yeah, well, when you look at the corn market now, ethanol production in the week ending April 30th, it averaged 952,000 barrels per day. That's up 7,000 barrels from the previous week. Ethanol stocks, now those increased about 700,000 barrels from the previous week, but stocks did remain relatively tight.
Yeah, very, very much so. As a matter of fact, I would call them too tight going into the driving season that I think everybody anticipates is going to be kind of above average.
Yeah, go look for a rental car. Good luck. Mm-hmm. Well, USDA this morning announced a sale of 184,000 metric tons of corn for delivery to Mexico in the new crop marketing year and sales to unknown destinations of nearly 46,000 tons. That's for old crop, as well as 101,000 metric tons for new crop delivery. Now, USDA did also announce that China canceled the purchase of 140,000 metric tons of corn that was to be delivered in the current marketing year. July corn futures were 11.75 cents higher at 708.5. September corn up 20.75 at 631. You know, when you look at these prices today, Chip, also December corn closed at 604.75, up 24.25 cents.
Yeah. Crazy move. And it's it I want to talk to Jamie about the influence of the professional trading funds and the influence that they are having on the market. Even though we've got plenty of fundamental support in here, I don't know if we'd be seeing a move like this if it wasn't for the funds in here buying.
Yeah. Well, profit taking in soybean oil, that really limited buying in soybean futures early in the session. After midday, the pool of strong gains in corn pulled beans along for the ride, adding support to bean prices. That's some logistical issues in Brazil, where low river levels, Chip, are making it difficult to get beans into exportable positions. November beans came within a half a penny of the contract high and posted a new contract high close. July bean futures, those were 4 cents higher at 15.42 and a quarter. August beans up 9.5 to 14.91 and a half. And November bean futures closed 13.82 and three quarters, up 19.5 cents today, Chip.
Yeah, technical momentum is clearly building to the upside in beans.
Yeah, real quick, after two big down days to start the week, June live cattle posted an inside trading day with a high range close. June live cattle were $1.40 higher at 114.42 and a half. And October cattle added $1.35 to close at 123.10. August feeders, those were actually up 205 to 145.22 and a half. And then real quick, Chip, another day, another new contract high for lean hogs. June lean hogs were 87 and a half cents higher at 114.42 and a half. And August hogs, those jumped 132 and a half to 109.80. Another day you needed your seatbelt, Chip.
Yeah, definitely. No doubt. And that was not a mistake. June cattle and June hogs both closed at 114.42 and a half.
It's just unbelievable. All right. That's a check of your news, Chip.
Thank you so much, Tyne. We'll talk to you again tomorrow. That is Tyne Morgan, U.S. Farm Report. All right. Let's bring him in. Bubba, Todd Horowitz, BubbaTrading.com. How you doing, man?
The big enchilada. What's up, baby?
I knew you'd latch onto that. I knew you would.
You know I would. Listen, all I got to do is listen to AgriTalk every week. You'll get the scoop. We've been calling for higher, 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 and they're going higher yet.
You're still on the blue side.
I'm more on the blue side.
Oh, man. Aren't you getting a little nervous? Heavying up?
No. Why should I be nervous? Listen. The trend is up. There's more money going to flow in here. There's a whole bunch of issues that could cause even higher prices coming. And you know what? When it reverses, I'll get out and I'll go the other way. But right now, there is no reason to even think we're anywhere near close to a top with all the things going on in the world. And yet the economy's starting to open. I mean, there's a lot of things that could cause higher prices here. We got some weather issues around the world. Hey, you know, no reason to buck it. We've been long for quite a while, as you know, and I think there could be some much bigger numbers than we've ever seen before, but we'll see. Again, I don't make those kind of predictions, but as far as I'm concerned, I'm blue and I'm staying there for at least another few days until something drastically changes.
Gotcha. All right. Yeah. You know, Bubba, at some point we need to have an extended conversation about what this might look like on the other side of the top.
100%. Would love to do it with you anytime you want, baby. I'm always here because we do have to recognize that they do stop. And, you know, knowing how to identify the end is also important as well. So that you
absolutely
don't get killed.
That is absolutely 100% correct. Real quick.
And it does. Just real quick.
Real quick. The like pits are gone now.
I'm sorry?
The pits are gone completely. It's heartbreaking.
Yes, it is. Very
all
bad.
Right, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Cattle Todd Horowitz.
Each year, there are billions of bushels of corn out there just waiting to solve the world's most pressing issues like climate change. Demand fluctuates. Exports are unreliable. So how do we use all that corn right here at home to change the world? POET is working hard to ensure reliable domestic demand for ever-increasing corn yields. Not only is the need for clean bioproducts made from your crops continuing to increase, nationwide adoption of E15 is also on the horizon. This would increase the amount of bioethanol in the nation's fuel supply from 10 to 15%, resulting in a market of almost 2 billion bushels of new corn demand each year. That's 2 billion really good reasons to support biofuels. It's time for farmers and policymakers to unify around E15. Bioethanol is the key to successful agriculture, and successful agriculture can change the world. Learn more at poet.com/ag.
never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Chip Flory. This is AgriTalk. Davis is on vacation this week. He'll be back with us next week. And like I said earlier today, he did send me a text. He wanted to remind all of you guys, everybody out there, that it's Mother's Day this weekend. On Sunday, Joe, get in front of your question. It's Mother's Day on Sunday. And so, you know, prepare. Prepare for it. All right. Let's get into the conversation right now with Jamie Kwocki. He is with Paragon Investments. Jamie, it is good to talk with you again. How are you, man?
Great. How are you doing?
We're doing just fine. Just fine. I want to start with your take on the general conditions of the market. You heard what Bubba was saying, that he's on the blue side of the card, plans on staying there, and sees a lot more upside potential. I mean, is he crazy?
No, I'm still bullish as well here short term. I think there's still lots of fund money that's going to pour in. We obviously have the drought down in Brazil. You know, estimates of maybe 60% of the top end, maybe probably even more, are already lost. Our exports are huge. We're already more than double where we were last year. You know, obviously we're in COVID, but they're still very, very strong right now. Yep. And I just continue to kind of see weather issues popping up off and on too. You look at Saturday, this coming Saturday, we could have a nice little freeze out east. Yep. Again, where some of the corn is planted pretty aggressively.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Nobody's really talking about that. Isn't why the bear spreads work today, is it?
No, that's just been some major, major profit taking. Everybody's been bull spread with the good demand and just kind of seeing some profit taking. Those spreads got way, way overdone, and I think everybody probably load back up on them again pre-report next week.
Yeah, usually don't need the calculator to figure out the inverse in corn. But I don't know about you, but I needed it when it was – well, it's still at like $1.50 from the July out to the D's, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got July at 708.5, the D's at 604 and change.
Yeah, it's crazy. Crazy. Okay, the Chinese corn cancellation that was announced this morning, is that any concern of that? Is something that we should be concerned about?
Yes, and kind of keep it back up a week, too. There was a lot of concern last week that they were going to do that, and they didn't. They kept it on the crop side, and I think that helped the market out big time as everybody thought, okay, the carryout number is going to be 1.2, 1.3 maybe next week because of that. But now we're kind of back to where we were last week, and I think it could be a start of a trend, maybe not a weekly one, that we're going to see a lot of this stuff shifted further out onto the horizon.
Okay, how is the market going to handle that?
I think eventually it's going to be bearish, and you're starting to see some profit taking. But right now, you know, with Mexico being an aggressive buyer, you know, grains, pork, and other, you know, countries as well, there hasn't been a whole lot of concern yet. Open interest continues to go up, which is bullish. Over above $7 now and $6 July in D's corn, and technically it still looks great, and you know, another leg higher. But I think probably come mid to late June into July, you know, put our seasonal highs in again, and we start to backtrack a lot of this.
Okay, what's the reason for the cancellations? I mean, have they fixed their corn shortage, or is something else going on with China?
I think there's something else going on. I think there still is a shortage over there. I don't know if they think, you know, if they can play the waiting game and just, you know, go hand in hand pretty much like they already are over there, or what their strategy is. But I think eventually they will be back to get it. It's just a matter of timing of, you know, do our prices tank first, or do they, you know, cave in first?
See, that's the important point that I think you just made, Jamie, is eventually they'll be back for this corn that they're canceling. So we're basically spreading their demand out over a longer period of time is what we're doing, right?
Yeah, it's being shifted out into the new crop. And, you know, obviously, you know, you're over a dollar cheaper. And, you know, they think they can save a little bit of money, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. man, when I've said this a couple of times on the show, Jamie, but when your one job is to make sure that you've got feed or corn to keep the feed mill running, if you run out of corn, that's on you. It feels like a dangerous game to play, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, horrendous way to run a business, run a country. I mean, how are they classified over there? But, yeah, you get, you know, caught, you know, upside down, and it's a train wreck, and you never really get caught back up. It just takes so long to reload up without just spending top piles of money.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When I saw the cancellation this morning, one of the first things I thought was, well, maybe the corn crop in Brazil isn't losing bushels as fast as I thought it was. Could that be some of the influence on this?
Maybe a tad bit, but not a whole lot of concern with that today. I mean, there's still estimates for next week's report that, you know, we could see the Brazilian corn crop down roughly 10 million metric tons. That's probably all in the market right now. I think the big surprise could be on the corn side, you know, that the Brazilian crop is not that bad. But they're in pollination right now, and, you know, kind of see how we get through these next 10 days down there, but it still looks pretty dry. Argentina has turned a lot better the last 2 weeks. There seems to be no issues over there with their crop.
Yeah. Yeah. I know you've seen it too, but some of the videos coming out of, and I don't know if it's the driest areas or the worst areas or completely 100% representative of what that corn crop is going through down there. But it does not look good. There's no question about that. And I can't imagine. Do you really think USDA might take 10 million a ton off that crop in next week's report? That would seem a little aggressive to me for this USDA.
I completely agree. Those are just the average estimates right now, taking 10 million off. I don't see them being that aggressive. I think the surprise next week's report, just looking at Brazilian numbers, they only justify a couple, you know, 2 or 3 million metric tons, and we continue to play catch up, you know, later on. But yeah, 10 million is just kind of just where the ballpark is right now, you know, dropping total crop size down into low to mid 90s.
Right. Okay, I want to go back and talk a little bit more about the money flow in this market and what the funds are doing and so on. Because Bubba, the last several weeks, has made a comment, and he made it again, with all the money that's out there in the market right now, more and more of it's going to be flowing to commodities and to the grain markets is what he's been saying. Is there a new generation of trader coming into ag commodities?
That's a great question, because if you look at the other side of kind of investing, trading on stocks, you know, we have seen that, you know, with the Robinhood, you know, trades and that, and GameStops and all that. Yes, I do think we are seeing that a little bit in commodities, nothing big yet for the grain sector. I think an issue with the grain trade is kind of the overnight trade, in my opinion. It's awfully, awfully thin. I mean, we're trading, you know, over 12 hours, you know, before the pause starts at 7:45 in the morning. And you get these thinly traded markets where guys are just running their logarithms all night long, and you're up 20 cents, and you wake up and you're like, okay, they back all the rain out, we freeze somewhere, what's going on? And nothing's changed at all. Then the day session falls through right with it.
Right. So the influence of the algorithms that you were talking about, the influence of the professional trading funds with their expanded limits, position limits. I mean, it seems like an obvious statement to make, but the influence of the funds has never been greater than what it is right now.
No, I agree. And I think it's going to get bigger and bigger all summer long. And, you know, they can change on a dime. You know, we start getting, you know, normal grain conditions here, and you're going to come down, you know, faster than we went up, and they'll be short before we know it too, eventually. But, you know, we're seeing it in the metals, we've seen it in the energies, all these inflationary markets, you know, the big money just wanted to pound it.
Right. You know, and we love them when they're on the buy side, but when they turn this thing around, Jamie, and I'm not talking about getting short, I'm just talking about getting out. It could be ugly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You could, you know, back corn off an easy dollar, beans 2 to $3. And you really say, okay, that's kind of where we started from. We took the premium out. Let's see what happens now. That's just how big a rally we've had. You look at these old crop corn contracts, they're up close to 150% over the last 12 months.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. The way that the market is moving and the waves. And not only that, it's not only the fun buying, it's just the general lack of selling in this market too, Jamie.
Yeah, yep. Oh, big time. That's right. Go back to the overnight session where it started there, and there's no turning back once we start, you know, with the day session. And
yes.
Everybody's just chasing, you know, more and more buys and thinking, all right, the top's not in. Nothing's changed fundamentally, and keep on doing it.
Yep. Okay, Jamie, when we come back, domestic demand, ethanol for corn. And then let's get to the bottom line on those S&Ds, carryover expectations for next week. It's time for headline news featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing today. Low water along Argentina's Paraná River again is a concern for barge movement. Panama Canal concerns are raised by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. Indian government gives away wheat to ease the strain of COVID and bulging stocks of wheat there, of course. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen walked back her remarks earlier on Tuesday that interest rates might need to rise to keep the economy from overheating. A U.S. import boom, consumers, and a fresh round of stimulus money pushed U.S. demand for imported goods. U.S. birth rate falls to the lowest point in more than a century. Bozeman makes clear his opposition to a USDA-administered carbon bay. Check out all of that at tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. I don't know what you're thinking! So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We're having a conversation with Jamie Kawaki. He is with Paragon Investments. Real quick, though, I'm going to go ahead and recap how the markets closed. July HRW wheat, 17 and 3/4 cents higher at 717. July SRW jumped 17 and 3/4 to 744 and a half. July corn futures, 11 and 3/4 cents higher at 708 and a half. December corn closed at 604 and 3/4, up 24 and a quarter cents today. That's the first close above $6 for the D's corn contract. July bean futures, 4 cents higher at 1542 and a quarter. November beans up closed at 1382 and 3/4, up 19 and a half cents today. December cotton jumped 50 points to 85.56. June live cattle, buck 40 higher at 114.42 and a half. August feeders up 205 to 145.22 and a half. And June lean hogs 87 and a half cents higher at 114.42 and a half. Like I said, that is not an error. Both June live cattle and June lean hogs closed at 114.42 and a half. Jamie Kawaki, Paragon Investments, is our guest. What do you make of that, Jamie, with June cattle and June hogs at the same level? Weird, man.
Yeah, it is crazy. You know, these cash hog prices, you know, up $3 early morning, cutouts on fire. I still think there's more upside in the hogs. I mean, I think we could eventually be talking 140, depending on the situation over in China. But back to the cattle, I think the cattle probably bottomed out this week short term. The cutouts, you know, above 300. Packers, you know, making probably just shy of $1,000 a head now. And we're trying to fight all the discount to futures. And I look for that to narrow. But I think we can put a couple bucks here in these cattle futures pretty quick.
Dude, something's got to give. Something has got to give in this live cattle market. If it doesn't, if that live cattle market doesn't participate and we don't move some of that near $1,000 packer profit margin further down the supply chain and get it into the feed yard, freaking feeder cattle might be free this fall. If we don't fix what's going on in live cattle.
Yeah, I completely agree. We seem to can't get divorced, and from those situations like you're talking about, you know, the cattle guy out, you know, small guys are taking a bloodbath, and, you know, you hope to break even, and most of the time you can't anymore, and the Packers, you know, are laughing all the way to the bank. And, you know, we keep, you know, hearing the government's going to do something with it, and nothing ever happens. And then, you know, this week we got rumors flying around. There's a labor shortage again, and one Packer may shut down for maintenance upgrades. There's nobody shutting down for maintenance upgrades, making $1,000 a head.
No way.
It's just crazy, but the market trades it.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. That's exactly right. And then you look at some of the success stories out there of guys that are starting up their direct-to-consumer beef sales. And there's new shackle space coming online in the next, 8 months to 12 months, Jamie. I don't know if it's going to be enough to have a major impact on the market, but it's still going to take a little time, I fear, to move any leverage into the feed yard, right?
Yeah, you're years and years away. I mean, there they are several, you know, guys doing, you know, 50, 100 head a day, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I do think that is the long-term story that, you know, the consumer will go to, you know, the small grocery chains will go to of, you know, the picture on the whatever ground beef that came from this farmer in this town instead of, you know, whatever, everything's from Tyson. But, yeah, we're still years and years away. I mean, to build a big facility, you're probably 2 to 3 years away and hundreds of millions of dollars away.
Right. Yeah, that's a big part of it, hundreds of millions of dollars. But with the way the margins are right now, I cannot believe that there isn't some very strong consideration given to expanding capacity.
Yeah. Well, you got a big one going up out in western Nebraska. And yeah. That's going to help those guys out there drastically. And some other stuff, I think, down the pipeline. But if you could devise some type of profit sharing to the producer, you know, Packers say, all right, we make, you know, $500 a head, you get a $100 bonus, or we're making $1,000 a head, you get an extra $300. I mean, just something to profit share.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you on this. Okay. Did you say $140 hogs?
I think you very eventually could wind up there. I think the hogs still have a wide trading range to the upside. I think you're going to see more and more money come in there, and just, you know, set my positions there right now.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of that's going to depend on what's going on in China, and it sounds like
China.
The ASF that they're dealing with right now is a bit worse than what they've let on, surprise, surprise, and their recovery efforts to build that breeding herd. Sounds like it stinks.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing. There's no relief in sight at all for them, and we're moving a lot of pork to Mexico too right now.
Right, absolutely. What's going on with ethanol? What do you like?
Well, then we record high RIN prices yesterday on bullish ethanol, probably the most bullish I've been in years for right now. I think with this, you know, inflationary markets, more inflation to come, crude oil's going to head to 80. And I think it's going to increase, you know, ethanol demand big time, and, you know, and continue to cut down on the carryout and corn to help guys out. But I like it right now. Best I've really thought about it in a couple of years.
What's the consumer's attitude towards ethanol now? Has it shifted in the last 12 months, 24 months?
I think so a little bit. I mean, they're still concerned, you know, from, you know, one hard side against it that, you know, we're still burning supply and all that. Then you got the other side, you know, it's clean energy. It increases, you know, profits for farmers, and that's still the longer term story I think most people listen to. But you go to the pump, I mean, it's the only pretty much option if you want to, you know, keep your prices in check right now.
Right. Yeah, you know, and the other thing is you don't hear the bad mouthing of ethanol from the big oil PR machine like we were. So I feel like maybe just from a lack of that constant misinformation coming from big oil, that we could be getting a little bit of a turn there on the consumer attitude. I hope that's the case.
I really agree with you. We're not seeing too kind of like the Trump administration where it seemed like daily we're doing something for big oil with some type of, you know, re-regulation. And that's kind of slowed down here the first 100 days with Biden.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Bottom lines for next week. you mentioned earlier that there's an idea that we might see a 1.2, 1.3, something below the 1.5 that we're working with on the corn carryover for next week and the supply and demand. What's your attitude toward it?
Yeah, I think you're about a 1.23, 1.24 are our figures. I mean, obviously, I think the market's maybe even trading a little bit more or less than that, maybe 1.1. But I don't think it's going to be a huge game changer. We're going to shave off a couple hundred million to keep the trend going upwards. Beans, you know, 105, that area is our opinion. It's probably, you know, below 100, but that's probably going to be it for the USDA right now. But obviously, you know, record tight supplies, record tight usage, and just keeps the market supported and continuing to, you know, high teens in the beans and maybe another 50 cents upside easy in corn.
Okay. It's going to be our first official look at the 2021-22 marketing year from USDA. What should we be watching for there?
Yeah, I don't think you're going to see the big adjustment yet in acres. I think that's still to come yet. You know, obviously, probably late the June report. And I think the key there, numbers I'm going to be looking at, is still just how tight supplies are worldwide. I mean, there's really no margin of error this year, next year, with the crop, you know, not getting trendline plus, or we're going to be in the same situation of, you know, inflationary markets, talk of rationing, and trading these, you know, record high prices just about.
Yeah, okay. I started to get to this topic with Bubba a little bit. What does the other side of the price high look like for you, Jamie? I mean, is it a quick setback? Is it a drift lower? What do you anticipate?
Yeah, I think when we do start to top out, I think it's going to be a quick one. I don't think we're going to, you know, sit up here and, you know, just move the trading range a buck and a half, $2 higher, and these are the new norms. You know, like I said, I think you could knock off 50, 60, 70 cents in corn. You know, if everything changes, you can knock off a couple bucks in beans easy. You know, I think quick, you know, weather stays good pollination, and we get more acres. But the other side still is, you know, we got the droughts in the Dakotas, the fires.
Yep.
How many bean acres do we lose in North Dakota already? Does the rain this, you know, next 10 days stay south and east, the Delta and Ohio River Valley? And so, there, I mean, there's still a lot of bullishness out there. But when they get ready to pull the plug, I don't think it's just going to be a, you know, 2 or 3 day sell off and everybody forgets about it and we go back up again.
Gotcha. Scale of 1 to 10 here. 1 is record yields for corn and soybeans. 10 is being 2012 like conditions. What's your level of weather anxiety for 2021?
I think the anxiety level is probably going to be a 6 or 7, but I still go back to looking at, you know, some of these past years in different pockets of the belt, corn belt, bean belt, where they've had some, you know, nasty conditions, dryness or too much rain, and these genetics are just so unbelievable anymore. I mean, does it matter? You know, come harvest. I mean, these guys are still producing humongous crops with horrible conditions.
Right. Okay, real quick, we got to go to the phone line. Greg in Nebraska. Greg, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you?
Good, Chip. Thanks for taking my call. Just two quick questions. Number one, at what point does the corn price slow down the ethanol market from a buyer standpoint at the ethanol plants? When does it start to really hurt them from a financial perspective?
Okay.
And number two on the ethanol, and then number two, real quick, on the ethanol thing, from a consumer perspective, when ethanol first came out, you know, we were at like a 90 or 91 octane, yeah. And now it's back to like an 87,
yeah.
88. Why aren't they using that more as an advantage to keep that,
yeah,
90, 91 octane? And
I got you, Greg.
A selling thing.
Jamie, what's the price that slows down ethanol production?
I think you're seeing that right now. It's going to be here quick and soon. There's very little corn in the country. They're already having trouble finding it. And I think anywhere from here on higher, you're going to see the numbers start to back up on the weekly sheets. I completely agree on the pump. You know, why aren't we 91?
Thanks, Jamie. Appreciate you, buddy. I'll answer that octane next.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. What more do you need to know?
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Greg called right at the end of the last segment there. Had a couple of really good questions. We got the answer from Jamie on what price it might take to slow down some ethanol production. Jamie said we're there. We're basically there because of the incredibly light cash movement that is out there and the difficulty to attract any corn to town. So it feels like we've still got some upside momentum going on ethanol production. And with those record RIN prices, I would sure think that it's that the blenders are going to be looking for more ethanol rather than paying up for the RINs in the near term. Now, why aren't we seeing higher octane levels on the blends for ethanol? Because when they came on, a lot of it was 89, 91 octane. Well, it's because of the feedstock or the blend stock, excuse me, the blend stock. The refiners are saving money by instead of refining to 87 octane and then spiking it with ethanol to get to an 89 or a 91, they're blending to like 84, 85 octane and spiking it with ethanol to get it to 87 or 89 or 88 as with the E15. So the refiners have talked about forever how, you know, ethanol costs some money, blah, 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 all that. They've basically, that those last points of octane are the most expensive points to get to in the refining process. So they've been saving a ton of money by refining to a lower blend stock. And that way, then they come in at the minimum 87% or 87 octane with those with the 10% ethanol. They're just so bad. That's all I can say. Okay, let's have a conversation right now with Dave Walton. Dave is a farmer near Wilton, Iowa. He's on the Iowa or with the Iowa Soybean Association. He's a member, a board member of the National Biodiesel Board. And if you're wondering where Wilton, Iowa is, it's not too far from the world's largest truck stop right there along I-80. Dave, it's good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's a bright, sunny day in Iowa, so I couldn't be better.
Dude, tell me about it. After that streak that we went through, it was getting a little old. It's sure nice to see some sun. It'd be good. How much rain did you pick up?
Depending on farm, anywhere from a half to an inch.
Okay. You did pretty good. We got 2/10 up here, and it was barely even noticeable. All right. Yeah. You were in a meeting yesterday with EPA Administrator Michael Regan. How'd that go?
It was interesting. It actually went really well. There were about 30 ag leaders from around the state of Iowa there representing most of the commodity groups. So we had a good discussion with the administrator, and Secretary Vilsack was there as well.
Yeah. I would think that, you know, obviously Secretary Vilsack is going to be very receptive to the biodiesel and biofuels in general. What is Michael Regan's attitude toward, how does he receive the information? Does he receive it willingly, or does he kind of push back on some things?
It was refreshing at how willingly he received the information. He was cool. There to learn. He understands that he doesn't know everything he needs to know about the industry. So that was a lot of the reason for the trip yesterday, is to learn.
Okay. What do you feel like his attitude was going home, that biofuels can be part of the carbon solution that the administration is looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. I think cool. I walked away with a meeting with two main things. Yeah. One is he understands that ag has to have a seat at the table when we talk about climate change, the sustainability of our system in the U.S. So that was one of the big takeaways. The other big takeaway was that he actually understands the law when it was referring to the RFS. Mm-hmm. And he said the same thing over and over again, that he intends to follow the law. He intends to follow the intent of Congress. And he intends to follow the science, in that biodiesel and ethanol, to a lesser degree, lowers the carbon footprint of the liquid fuel system in the U.S.
Dave, for more years than I care to count up, all we've been asking for is to follow the letter of the law of the RFS, right?
You and me, buddy. That's as many trips as I've made to D.C., that's the thing that we've been preaching to them, and I think they're finally getting it.
You know, Big Apple won't remember this because it's before his time with us, but if Davis were with us today right now, he'd be clenching his teeth and saying, just follow the law, because that was so many of my rants.
yeah. That's exactly the case. You know, whether it be the lack of expansion of the volume obligation or SREs that took volume out of the marketplace, those are the things that we kept hammering on, and that Congress was fairly clear in that law. And they had an intent, and we had several administrators that didn't follow the intent. But I think this one does. I think he gets it.
This is going to be fun. I had a conversation with Don L. yesterday, and I wrapped it up by saying, hey, this is an exciting time for biodiesel. You got to be feeling it too, aren't you?
Yeah, it is. Especially after that meeting yesterday, I think... it's refreshing to have someone who understands the industry and is receptive to our ideas and understands that biodiesel can be the drop-in replacement and reduce the carbon footprint of liquid fuels.
It's fantastic. Man, Dave, I'm glad you were there. I'm encouraged by what you experienced in the meeting. And, boy... It feels good to be able to trust him in a positive way. We still need to verify down the road, but it feels good to trust him right now. Thank you so much for making time, Dave.
Sure, absolutely. Glad to take the time.
You bet. That is Dave Walton. He is with the Iowa Soybean Association. He's a board member of the National Biodiesel Board, farmer down there at Wilton, Iowa. Okay, you got to come back tomorrow morning. Former Senator Byron Dorgan, and tomorrow afternoon, Chip Nellinger. Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, right here on AgriTalk.